Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan. And we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast contains adult language and stories of true crime. If you don't like laughing, crying, or being horrified at the actions of other humans, this podcast is not for you.
Welcome to Resolve Mysteries Podcast. I'm Carlin.
I'm Allison.
I'm Eliza.
Welcome back to the show. This is part two of season four, episode nine. If you didn't listen to part one, go back and listen. No skipping. And as most of you know, for every review we receive, we donate a dollar to a different organization. And this month's organization is the Wild Bird Fund, suggested by patron Thomas G. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas.
Tweet, tweet, little birdies. If you'd like to recommend a nonprofit for us to support and support us on Patreon, you'll get access to ad-free episodes, two additional episodes a month, early access to listener short stacks, along with goodies in the mail. Go to patreon.com/resolvemysteriespodcast. Okay, what are we covering in this episode?
All right, I have got the unexplained death of Beverly McGowan.
And I have a wanted segment, and it is about Sal Guardado.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay. Many of you might know about this case, or some of you.
I do.
Or one of you.
It's me.
Do I? I don't know if I remember. Despite rewatching.
Yeah. We should say that we did the research for this literally months ago. It's kind of nice, though. It's like, oh, thank you, former self, for doing the work.
Way to go, Past Eliza.
Yeah. So I got to mention right off the bat that this segment about a woman named Beverly McGowan has been featured on Case File.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so Case File episodes are like 2 hours, and this will not be a two-hour segment. Listen to mine first, of course, but then you can go listen to the Case File episode because it's very good. And Allison told me about it, so thank you, Schmallison.
You're welcome.
Okay, so this segment opens with Stack telling us that Jane McGowan received a disturbing letter from her sister, Beverly. You'll probably start to remember soon, Carlin. That was postmarked from the day before. Part of the letter reads, "Well, you'll probably think she's really gone this time, but I've got to make some major changes in my life. I quit my job, sold the condo and furniture, and I'm leaving. I need to travel to get away from my life as it is. I know when I come back, life will be different. For the first time, I will be able to do what I want, buy what I want, without worrying about everything. Life has got to be better. I'm going to make it better. Goodbye, Beverly." Steve McGowan, who's Beverly's brother, also received a letter where Beverly said, "I just want to say goodbye to you and the kids and let you know that what I'm doing is the right thing." Steve explains that this is incredibly out of character for Beverly and that for his sister to just up and leave meant that something was very, very wrong. She worked really hard to buy the condo that she had and get the job at the bank that she had, which she really seemed to love. So both Steve and Jane, siblings of Beverly's, think this is just something is not right, which would be really scary. And I'm actually so glad that they had each other because it'd be really weird to be like just the only other sibling so it's nice to have another person to be like, this is crazy, right? Yeah, this is not right.
Yeah, totally.
So Steve and Jane went to her condo to investigate, and her car was gone, which also, great siblings. Like, I love that they weren't just like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, they're both just like doing the thing that needs to be done. I love that. So her car was gone. Her phone was disconnected, all unnecessary. The only things missing were her two cats, her address book, her birth certificate, and her passport. Other things about the apartment did not seem like she had left it for the last time. Her nightgown was still on her bed, which had not been made. In the case file episode, Steve and Jane called her work, who said she had called in sick 2 days earlier, and that wasn't in the UM segment. She then asked to be transferred to someone in the mortgage department. Like, she's like, I can't come into work today. Also, can you transfer me to the mortgage department of this bank that I work at? And she told the mortgage department, that she wanted the bank to foreclose on her condo and gave them permission to sell all the things that were inside after they foreclosed on it.
Mm. Take my house and all of my stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, I can't come in today.
I'm also,
yeah. By the way, cough, cough. We say she in quotes, obviously.
Yes.
So in early July of 1990, 34-year-old bank clerk Beverly McGowan began advertising for a roommate to live with her in her Pompano Beach condo. She interviewed and met with a few people, but she told her friends and family that she had met an especially interesting woman who was from London named Alice. Alice was working for IBM and just happened to be being transferred to Florida. She drove a nice car and appeared to be a successful career woman, and the two seemed to get along well. And there are several of her friends who say she was really excited about this new roommate, so Beverly chose her immediately. They also shared an interest in the new, what Stack calls the New Age movement, of numerology. So Alice, her new roommate, agreed to do a numerology chart for Beverly before she moved in, and they showed this as a reenactment. And this is actually incredibly smart slash scary, but Alice is doing a numerology chart for Beverly, so she needs important numbers from her personal life, such as her birth date, her passport number, and her social security number.
Yes, because that's how numerology works. They definitely need your passport number.
Yeah, that's the most important number to me of all.
I mean, sure, if you're going to look at the stars and make a chart, you need that passport number.
Yeah, that the government gave me. After the chart was completed, Alice told Beverly that she would find true romance and accumulate great wealth. However, she also claimed that a man and woman that were close to her would deceive and hurt her.
Oh, like her brother
and sister? Like possibly her brother and sister. So on July 17th, a few days after Alice moved in, Beverly was not seen again. On July 19th, several of her family and friends, like I said, received letters from her claiming that she had sold her condo and was planning to start a new life without them. On the same day that Beverly's family and friends received the letters, her mutilated body was found. She had been dumped in a remote canal in St. Lucie County, Florida, 100 miles from her home. Her death is particularly awful. Her killer had slit her throat, crudely decapitated her.
Oh, my God.
Leaving a portion of the lower jaw and five of her teeth, but clearly they had tried to remove everything. So she could not be identified because they also removed her hands.
Oh, my God.
They cut a tattoo of Thumper from Bambi off her abdomen to delay identification.
Ugh.
So at first when people find, I think it was even kids that found the body. Of course, it always is.
It
like
always is.
Children playing around or a kid with their father or something. They didn't know who she was. But the killer missed a second tattoo of a yellow rose on her ankle, and that is what helped family and authorities identify Beverly McGowan as the body, along with dental records, because they left five teeth.
Oh, God.
So then, of course, these letters get found out. Her family's like, and also look at what's going on. So the police were really confused. Like, did the killer write these letters? The family said, no, this is her handwriting.
Wow.
And there appeared to be no evidence, I guess, through handwriting analysis that she was forced to write them. Like, there was no stress in the formation of the letters.
Hmm.
So police immediately set their suspicion on Alice, but they don't know who Alice is. They don't have her last name. Mm-hmm. None of her friends or family met this Alice. All that they had heard about her was that she was from London and she worked for IBM.
Mm-hmm.
So someone was seen using Beverly's credit card after her murder.
Oh, that's right.
And she withdrew. The number says, UM says $300 from an ATM. Case file said it was $795 of the $800 in her account. They left $5.
Oh, my God.
So either way, they know what she has, most likely, and they are taking out a lot of money, like, in this time, for mm-hmm. sure. And this is on the day that Beverly's body was found. This credit card is used, and it's used in several shops in the area. So then this part is very, very weird. An individual calling themselves Sam used her credit card the day after her body was found at a travel agency to reserve a rental car at London's Heathrow Airport, but from Florida. Mm-hmm. Sam is male presenting person. The travel agent described Sam as having a British accent and looking very masculine. The travel agent thought he could be a man dressed as a woman wearing a black Cleopatra style wig.
Well, female presenting.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I mean, female. Yeah. You're right. But in the reenactment, it's so clearly...
Well, in the reenactment, it's fully a man dressed as a woman.
But still female presenting, you're right.
But they're dressed as a woman and they have a wig on.
It's just weird when you think about it. Okay, you can keep all that in. Because what I mean by that is some people believe that Alice was presenting as a man trying to be a woman.
Oh. Like a double situation.
It's so weird. But what's confusing about it is, in the reenactment, it appears to be a male-bodied person presenting female.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of that means nothing to us, because to us, it doesn't matter. But yes, they were saying it was a...
But if it's someone who's hiding their identity, it sort of does, because they're trying to figure out the...
Gender.
Yeah.
Even though, yes, of course, it's tricky. So Sam told the travel agent that he was flying to London on British Airways flight 292, which departed on Sunday, July 22nd at 6:30. The travel agent described Sam, like I said, as looking very masculine. So police searched the passenger list for that flight and other similar ones, but Beverly's name did not appear on them. Like, they thought someone might have been using Beverly's identity to get there. So it's believed that either Alice, or if Sam is this other person, or Sam is Alice, was on that flight, but they have no idea what name that person was using.
Right.
But it wasn't Beverly's name. So on Monday, July 23rd, which is the day after the flight is supposed to be, a person matching Sam's description, but using Beverly's name, picked up a car at the Heathrow Airport. And again, using Sam's description, it's like, do you mean a masculine-looking person wearing a black wig?
Yeah.
It's just... So, which is why a lot of people think it was just her trying to, like, fuck with everybody.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I agree with that.
Okay.
So on July 25th, Beverly's car was found at a motel near Miami International Airport. It had been there for 5 days, and in it, investigators found black wig hairs, like possibly the Cleopatra-style wig. But this is back in Florida. Okay, so...
This case is so
crazy. It is so fucking crazy. Okay, so kind of an update, and then I'll keep going. So in December of 1996... after rechecking the British Airways Flight 292 passenger list. This is years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Authorities discovered that Alice had used the name Sylvia Ann Hodgkinson to purchase her tickets. Through this name, authorities were able to identify her as a con artist named Elaine Parent. So this name, Sylvia Ann Hodgkinson, had been like reported previously. But she's really smart to not use Beverly McGowan's name because mm-hmm. she knew they'd be looking for that right away.
Mm-hmm.
So this woman, Elaine Parent, had previously been acquainted with Sylvia Hodgkinson and had stolen her identity. In May of 1991, she was arrested while holding identification for both Hodgkinson and another woman, but she was released without charge.
Mm.
And then, of course, she's a murderer, so.
Oh, my God.
Murderer.
Forensic evidence in Beverly McGowan's car and, I love this, handwriting on a tablet in her condo was linked to Elaine. Oh. So that's when they use the compression.
I love that. Yeah.
Pen. And they've like someone's ripped off like the top paper, but they can see what was written below it because of the depression of the pen mark or whatever.
That's super cool.
Again, they go into this way more in Case File. But Elaine Parent, who you might know her name, was known as the Chameleon Killer, a nickname that she actually herself really loved. And she was able to elude capture for over a decade once they found that it was her.
Yeah.
So in April of 2002, so they have her name. In 96, they still can't find her. Wow. In April of 2002, 6 years later, after they know it's her, police finally catch up with her with the help of an anonymous tip from America's Most Wanted.
Ooh.
I know, partner shows.
Love it.
Love an AM dubs.
And I am going to get into more, but Elaine, this ends crazy. They catch up with her. At that time, she's living under the name Darlene Thompson back in fucking Florida.
Oh, she really liked it there.
She loves Florida. She's in an apartment in Panama City, Florida. Detectives arrive. They knock on the door. She goes, I gotta change my clothes.
Right.
They let her do that. A detective's like, you're taking too long. Knocks on the door. They hear a gunshot.
We have said it before. You do not let them go get their shoes. You do not let them go get a hoodie. Come the fuck on.
Yep.
What are you doing?
So, Elaine Parent killed herself.
Wow.
And avoided capture.
Mm.
A few more things. So, of course, there are like several unanswered questions still about the case. Like, who is Sam?
Yeah. So many unanswered questions.
So many.
Why do we need to literally chop a body up when we were just scamming?
Also, the head and hands never found.
Oh.
Have never been found.
Yikes.
I mean, it's Florida.
It is. It's gator country.
Yep.
A lot of people think she could not have acted alone because she dragged this body 100 miles away and then down the slope.
So maybe there is a Sam.
She could
maybe
not
there
have
is
acted
a Sam.
Alone.
Other questions. Was Beverly forced to write these letters?
Yeah.
Or had Elaine really sold her on this idea? Mm. With her new age stuff, with whatever, and she really believed it, wrote the letters, and then Elaine killed her.
Wow.
And that's the part that, like, her family, yes, there's a sort of a sense of closure, but also not.
Yeah.
Or they don't know actually what state she was in when her life ended. What did she want? Did she really want to go away? Did she believe that there was something good that was going to happen to her and then she was duped? Mm. Or was she forced to write those letters under duress?
Wow.
And then where was she killed? People don't know. Was she killed in her apartment? There was no evidence of that.
Mm.
Not in her car, from what people can tell. So the Case File episode goes into it more. But basically, as you probably know, Elaine Parent use numerology frequently to get important numbers from women and steal their identities. Like, obviously, Beverly McGowan is not her first victim.
No.
This bitch also scoured graveyards for names and dates of birth and stole the information of other potential roommates by telling them she was a numerologist, getting their social security number. So she's taking the identities of alive and dead people. No problem. No qualms about it.
Well, that's what they used to do, right? They would find a local tombstone that was the birth and death of an infant.
Yeah, babies. Uh-huh. That's true. Oh, my gosh. So McGowan's murder and the events leading up to it displayed a pattern in the way Elaine Parent operates. So she found her victim, this time by replying to a flat share ad that McGowan had put in a local newspaper. Like I said, McGowan was really excited about Alice because she could be very charming and that English accent fools all of us.
Yeah. Who would not fall for that?
Yeah. So she was really persuasive and just seems like it would work out great for anyone that met her, but especially for Beverly. The other crazy part that Beverly McGowan, once she kind of knew that they were on her tail, sent a photograph in 1998 to the police. Oh, sorry. It's a photograph of an oil painting of herself. I have a picture of it. We'll post it. It's like her in a bathing suit walking out of a pool, climbing the steps of a pool, but it's an oil painting. And the back, she wrote, "Best wishes, your chameleon."
Oh, God. She loved it.
She loved it. So then that's when the Florida press gave her the name the world's most wanted woman, which, of course, she loved that.
For sure.
So many identities stolen. Just the last part, the other thing that people wonder about is, okay, who else died?
Yeah, how, like, did she kill everyone whose identity she stole?
Like, if we were at the level of cutting tattoos off a body, that was not the first body.
Truly. So there is one other victim who survived that came forward. So in 1995, there was a detective assigned to the case, and he spent 2 months going over the file trying to find a new link between Hodgkinson, McGowan, and Parent, the three of them. Did they all know each other? Are these truly separate, Hodgkinson and McGowan, truly separate victims? And then this detective asked for help from the government, and the breakthrough came when a researcher at the U.S. State Department linked Elaine Parent to a series of names, including Elaine Haviland, Alex Hart, Alexis Marshall Hart, Brett Tremonti, Antonio Hamilton Russell, Victoria Dark, Sylvia Ann Hodgkinson.
Whoa.
So there is a victim who lived, who came forward. Her name is Charlotte Cowan, and she's the only known victim of the, quote, chameleon to have escaped with her life.
What?
So she met Elaine Parent in a bar near Disney World, Florida.
No.
The next day,
don't go there.
Charlotte had lunch with Elaine Parent. And Elaine Parent said she was inheriting a large fortune, but her brother was fighting to keep it for himself. So clearly, like, that tells you how charming Elaine Parent could be if they met at a bar and they're having so much fun that the next day, they had lunch together. Just a magnetic person.
Yeah.
So she's got this great story. Oh my gosh, I'm going to inherit so much money, but my brother's being an asshole. So then a month later, Elaine Parent comes to Charlotte's home. Here's where it comes. Disguised as a man, wearing a false mustache. But Charlotte knows it's Elaine. Elaine begs for help, and from what the story says, Elaine also knows that Charlotte knows it's her.
Okay. So it'd be like if you came to my door and you were wearing a mustache, I would be like, I recognize you. You would say, I know.
Yeah.
I know you
recognize me. I'm doing this on purpose or something.
Yeah. I need help. Yeah. And that's why I'm dressed like this.
Okay.
That's why people think
she's Sam.
She's Sam.
Yes.
Oh.
Because all she would have to do is put on a mustache and then put on a Cleopatra wig. And then people think that she's a man presenting as a woman.
So Elaine, dressed as a man, comes to Charlotte's home begging for help, claiming her brother was trying to have her locked away and she needed a new identity.
Oh my God.
Very dramatic way of stealing someone's identity.
Better than killing them and taking their head in hands.
So Elaine persuaded Charlotte to hand over in person, not just the number, the whole social security card.
Oof. Charlotte, honey.
Poor Charlotte. But Elaine's parents sent the card back to her in the mail. She did give it back to her.
So did she just really like Charlotte?
Well, poor Charlotte got arrested.
Oh, no. My God.
Elaine Parent had been using Charlotte's name.
Oh, God.
And people, they were looking for her, Elaine Parent, but they arrested Charlotte.
Charlotte.
So she shows up in trial for sentencing or whatever. And one of the detectives is like, you're not Elaine Parent. Like, you're not who we're looking for. I know what she looks like. And poor Charlotte's like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh, my God.
So anyway, that is one example of how crazy this person could be. And Charlotte could have been killed.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So then the other list of names that you just read off.
Yeah, it's unclear, like,
if they're real
names. Are those real names? Yeah. Is she making those names up?
Yeah. Right.
People have looked into and, like, obviously investigators have looked into, like, missing persons by those names. It doesn't seem like there are any. But like Carlin said, it's very unlikely that Beverly McGowan is her first murder victim.
Yeah.
With that level of precision, or at least trying to be precise, trying to hide the identity.
Ugh.
But anyway, this bitch shot herself because she couldn't face... She's an unwell person, that's for sure. And it's really... What happened to Beverly is awful, awful, awful.
It's terrible.
And anyone else that it happened to, too.
Wow.
Ugh.
One of the quotes from Charlotte, she said, I will never forget this woman. There is something amazing and glamorous about her.
Whoa.
So she is, I guess, enticing and magnetic, but rough.
Wow.
And then also, I mean, I'm not trying to be silly, but another one of the questions is like, what happened to her two cats? Did she kill them? I mean, that's truly true. They were gone. From
the
apartment.
Why wouldn't she just have left?
Why wouldn't she have just left?
Right.
That's kind of gross. And anyway. And her poor siblings. Like, I just feel so bad for Steve and Jane.
Yeah, I could see her kind of convincing her that they're going to betray her, so you might as well cut ties before they betray you.
Why else would she say there's a man and a woman?
Yeah. And then that's how she got her to write the letters.
Yeah.
And then she was free and clear to kill her. Wow.
Oh, my God.
But just the fact that her MO was not the same every time. Like, who knows what other ways she used to try and steal someone's identity?
Yeah, she's all over the map.
She's all over the place.
Mm.
Wow.
But listen to the case file episode.
Yeah, I want to.
It's great. Really,
I remember listening to it, and I had to keep rewinding it because I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a banana story, and there's so many moving parts.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Nice job, girl.
Mm. Wild.
Evil Transgression, your homicide headquarters in podcasting. Tune in weekly to the lesser known crimes and criminals. Join us, Josh,
Dustin,
and Rex,
as we dive into the cases and discuss just what may have led to these evil acts.
Modern murders and crimes of yesterday.
Evil women and monsters of men.
Get your quick dose of true crime each week with easy to follow, to the point episodes that keep you wanting more. Who would have thought evil could be this entertaining? Available on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, Google, and all other major podcasting platforms. Visit EvilTransgression.com for more info.
Imagine, if you dare.
Whoa, hold tight.
A podcast so shocking.
No, it's not that shocking. It's just...
so disturbing.
Now you're just being dramatic.
That it will chill you to your very core.
Have you even heard the show?
There's no escaping.
I mean, there is.
The horrible consequences of...
Just press pause, but don't do that.
Bright day.
Hi, my name is Byron McCoy, and each week I join my friends Sam and Kelly, where we talk films, monsters, the paranormal, and pretty much all things frightening. From time to time, we talk with like-minded specialists, directors, actors, cryptozoologists, conspiracy theorists. But whether it's the human terror of serial killers and home invasions, or the extra-normal phenomena Kelly covers in her Cryptids and Conspiracies segment, if it bleeds, hacks, stabs, chops, summons, sacrifices, abducts, or bites, it is Fright Day. Every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at FrightDay.com.
FrightDay.com.
Stop it. You're scaring them.
Sorry.
We've all experienced trouble falling asleep, tossing and turning, unable to shut your brain off, staring at the clock, checking your phone constantly. If you struggle with falling asleep, then I have a podcast suggestion for you. It's called Sleep Whispers, and it's 100% gentle whispering of bedtime stories, guided relaxations, and even fun trivia questions and interesting Wikipedia articles. Hosted by Harris, Sleep Whispers is so relaxing and soothing that you can't help but drift off to sleep. With over 800 five-star reviews, Sleep Whispers is your go-to for those sleepless nights. You can search for Sleep Whispers podcast in your podcast player or simply click the link that will be in our show notes. All right, so the last segment of season 4, episode 9 is a wanted segment, and we are wanted. We are wanting to want to find.
Nice.
Sal Guardado. So in February of 1985, Sally Garrity of San Francisco, California, met a young man named Sal Guardado in a local bar. In the reenactment, she asks his name, and he says Sal, and she says, "Sal, Sally, that's neat." So Sherry Yist, Sally's sister, says that Sally told her that she had met Mr. Wright. Sherry says that she was really happy that Sally was able to meet someone who made her happy. She says she saw in Sally's face that Sal had made her happy in just the short time that she had known him. Stack says that Sally Garrity was half Irish and half Shoshone Paiute. She and her sister Sherry were raised by their aunt in San Francisco, California. Sally was a bookkeeper and also made and sold Native American handcrafts when she met Sal. Sal worked part-time at a pizza parlor where Sally brought her family to meet him. Sherry says that Sally was glowing, that she liked Sal so much. Sally liked that he had a car and a job, and she was so happy. And that is such a low bar.
Low bar, girl.
Yikes. Stack says the romance proceeded at a whirlwind pace. Within a week, Sal proposed and took out a loan for a diamond ring.
No.
But unsurprisingly, it wasn't long before the relationship began to change. Sal lost his job and his car, like, in a few weeks. And Sal and Sally were forced to move in with her Aunt Lydia. Stack says there was another side to Sal. He grew surly and wouldn't do anything except watch TV and go bowling with his friends. And oh my God, truly, 3 weeks later, so 2 weeks after their engagement, after 1 week, Sally told Sherry that she wasn't happy with Sal. As they're leaving a festival that they were all attending, this is a reenactment, Sal tells Sherry that he wants to take her van back to the city. And in the reenactment, Sherry basically laughs at him because what he's asking is so ridiculous. So she laughs and she says it's not her van and he can't just take it. He accuses her of lying that it's someone else's van and then demands the keys. Sherry then saw that Sal was an asshole. Sherry says that Sally had told her she wanted Sal to leave and move out. But, like, let's be honest, why would he do that if he's living at Aunt Lydia's house for free? Why would he go anywhere? And, again, it has been 21 days. On May 23rd, 1985, 3 months after meeting Sally, Sal Guardado waited for her to come home. When Sal saw that a young man had given Sally a ride home, he became uncontrollable. Aunt Lydia returned home in the middle of the fight. And in the reenactment, Sal is calling Sally a slut. Then Aunt Lydia is interviewed and she says, quote, "Oh, I just hated him." She says that he was jealous. And in the reenactment, Sal tells Lydia to go to the store and get him cigarettes right away.
I hate him.
Yes, this person is a full-on garbage person, like a total piece of shit. He's a monster.
Like, Aunt Lydia should have been like, get the fuck out.
Aunt Lydia should have hit him over the head with a fucking frying pan. Mm-hmm. So Lydia says that he had never asked her to do anything for him like that before. And she now realizes he just wanted her out of the house.
Yeah.
30 minutes later, Lydia returned with the cigarettes. She says that she didn't see anything and she laid on the couch to watch the news. As she was laying there, she heard the bedroom door open and then Sal began to strangle her.
Ugh.
She fought with him, so he picked up a bowling ball and hit her on the head.
I could not believe it.
Yes. This, like,
disgusting
small elderly woman.
Yes.
This huge guy is on top of her on a couch, choking her, and then he picks up a bowling ball.
Picking the heaviest thing around.
And he smashes her in the side of the head with it.
Oh, my God.
She said that she could hear the bones crushing in her head, and the ball rolled over something, but that she was out. Stack says that 45 minutes later, Lydia regained consciousness. Lydia says that when she came to, she was weak and staggering around, and she went into the bedroom, and she saw Sally laying there.
Oh, gosh.
She says that she knew right away that Sally was dead. She then went to the neighbors and told them to call the police. Stack says that Sally Garrity had been strangled to death, possibly with a cat leash.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of questions.
Specifically cat over dog.
Mostly about cats on leashes.
Okay. I had a cat and my mom bought him a leash one time and we tried to walk him and he was not happy.
I know some people that do leash their cats, though, and they like it.
I guess that a member of this household also wanted to walk
their
cat.
So that must be it. Like, yeah, they just don't have a dog leash. That's why they say
exactly.
Cat leash. Wow.
Or it could have possibly been a telephone cord. Lydia had a concussion and lacerations.
I mean,
and that's
I can't believe she's alive.
Amazing.
He could have crushed her skull. I think he thought she was dead.
Yeah.
He thought she was dead.
Oh, for sure. She was out enough that she was out for 45 minutes.
He thought she was dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. During the investigation, Sally's family discovered that, surprise, surprise, Sal Guardado was a convicted felon with a long criminal record. He had spent 5 years in prison for arson and attempted murder, and the intended victim was a former girlfriend. Authorities immediately began combing the San Francisco area. They received reports that Sal might have left the country and disappeared in Mexico. Inspector Jeff Bosch of the San Francisco PD says that they thought they'd have the case solved right away. They had the FBI and local law enforcement involved, but they just couldn't find him. He said it boggles the mind how he could have avoided law enforcement for 7 years. Sherry says, quote, that in Native American beliefs or culture, we believe that if someone's life is taken before they're ready, their spirit can't rest until justice is served. She says that they don't believe that Sally's spirit will be able to rest until Sal is caught and brought to justice. Stack says that 3 months after Sal Guardado disappeared, a witness reported seeing him back in San Francisco. Authorities now suspect that Guardado may be in Miami, Hawaii, Mexico, or Puerto Rico. And then they do a very America's Most Wanted style description with height, weight, etc. But it's very, like, stylized now in a way that it wasn't in previous seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Stack mentions that he had a heart with an arrow and the name Rachel on his right arm.
Oh, boy.
So Sal Guardado has never been caught.
No.
He is still out there.
Ew. No.
And I wasn't able to find much more information about him that was in the segment, so I'll just share some bits of information that I found. Sadly and tragically, Sally had a child. And I think that Unsolved Mysteries didn't mention it because her sister, Sherry, raised her child. So I think maybe Sherry didn't want the child involved at all in the conversation.
Yes. Yeah, very respectable, actually.
And then I just found on unsolved.com, I found a few comments about Sally Garrity. An anonymous commenter said, quote, I met Sally when she came to stay in Oahu, Nevada with relatives. We became close friends and had a lot of good times together. Sally had the most infectious smile and a great sense of humor. She taught me how to do eye makeup, and she was never without her lip gloss. She carried around a giant purse, perfect for smuggling a six-pack of Colt 45 into a movie theater.
Queen.
She always had my back. We both left Oahu, and I never heard from her again, and it was a shock to see her story on TV. R.I.P., my friend. A commenter named T. Denson said, I met her in San Francisco at the Hotel Yerba Buena back in 1979. We became friends, and I saw her just about every night since I stayed at the hotel for 3 weeks for a training. She was with me the last night I was there. I never heard from her after I left, but years later, my mother and I were watching Unsolved Mysteries, and the host started talking about Sally. I told my mother that I knew her while I was in San Francisco. R.I.P. Mm. Sally. And then there was an odd comment from a user whose handle was Esquerdado, who said, quote, "He died. Word in the family is that he fled to the U.S. after the crime. Fled from the U.S. after the crime to Guadalajara, Mexico, where his father's family was. Not long after he was there, a big earthquake hit Mexico, and his family never heard from him again. They said he died."
Okay.
Of course, his family probably helped get him out of the country and would most assuredly lie about him being deceased, authorities wouldn't look for him. So everyone else in the comments is like, what would Salgadaro do? He would write this comment right here. Like,
sure, but...
Okay.
Oh, my God.
And then in 2009, a Sitcoms Online user, Cadmaris15, who we've heard from before, said, "Well, I believe he has a warrant out for his arrest for first-degree murder as well as attempted murder and assault with a deadly weapon, the latter two charges being for the attack on Lydia. My guess is Gordado went to Mexico. Even if he could have gotten on an Amtrak train, he would have gotten down to San Diego area and then easily gotten to the border from there. My guess is after he killed Sally and knocked out Lydia, he rummaged through the house looking for money or anything that had any value so he could pawn it for money. He probably commutes back and forth between California and Mexico, and it would not surprise me if he was living in the Bay Area to this day. He probably figures that because nearly 24 years have passed since the crime, that the police are no longer looking for him." And then the last comment that I found is from Meg the Egg, and she managed to find this information because she's a queen, and I don't know where she finds
this. I do not know. She always knows stuff.
Oh, no. She's amazing. But this is the last thing that I found. "Sally's sister Sherry recounted visiting a Popeyes somewhere in the Bay Area some months after Sally's murder and seeing someone she was certain was Gordado when she stepped outside. She was so sure it was Sal standing outside the restaurant that she was too frightened to approach or otherwise react to him, so she left immediately and called the police."
Mm. Whoa.
So it's very possible he could be anywhere.
Ugh.
Yeah. And that is the truly tragic story.
So sad.
Yeah.
He's a monster.
He's a monster. That all happened in, I mean, the whole relationship happened so in three fast. Weeks. And then the murder happened 3 months later. The whole thing happened in 90 days.
And again, that's another one that's like, that can't be his only victim.
No.
No.
I mean, he tried
almost
to kill his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he already had a record.
Yeah.
But just, like, being taken in by someone. And, like, you got the feeling just from the segment and the way Sherry was talking that Sally just, like, really wanted to be loved. She wanted to be in a relationship, and she really wanted to be loved. And so she was probably willing to, like, forego a million red flags. Like someone taking out a loan for a diamond ring after knowing you for 7 days. Mm. Like, I'm sure that that happens, and I don't want people adding us because, like, I know that your grandma and grandpa only knew each other for 2 weeks and stayed married for 45 years. But, like, in reality, like, generally, that's not a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. My heart goes out to her because she just wanted somebody to be nice to her and to love her, you know? That's not a lot to ask.
Of course.
Ugh. Too sad.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay. Allison and I have a shared shares.
We also have
separate shares.
We got so many shares. Well, it's been a month.
Some people are just rolling in shares.
We're rolling in shares.
We're rich.
I've been watching TV. I've been listening to podcasts. I've been going on adventures. amazing what happens when you give me 30 days.
Yeah,
do anything.
Without a kid. Well, we should say this journey began at 5 a.m. in the morning on the way to Newark Airport when I dragged Allison out of the house to take me to the airport.
We could not have a conversation, and Eliza
said... No, we were way too tired.
Eliza said, have you listened to any good podcasts lately? Yeah. And I said, well, I heard about this one, and we put it on.
And we listened to the first episode, and literally the end of the first episode ended as we were pulling up to the airport. It was perfect.
Oh, wow. Dream.
We did not have to say a word to each other.
It was awesome.
So the podcast that Allison found, and now we've listened to the whole thing, that's fucking insane, is called The Turning, The Sisters Who Left.
Yes.
All about the Missionaries of Charity, which is the Catholic order that Mother Teresa started.
Okay.
And the sisters who left that order because it's a little culty. Okay. And
pretty much culty.
Mother Teresa is maybe different than what we thought she was.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Which also just the Catholic Church, man. Oh, it's got some shit.
You know that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you just didn't think it touched Mother Teresa
for some reason.
Or, yeah. Highly recommend this. It needs to. I texted Allison when I finished it and said, this needs to, like, win an award for journalism. It's fucking incredible.
So well done.
Mm-hmm. The storytelling and just like the characters weave in and out of episodes, but you kind of get to like follow, not characters, women, and then also this like trans man that was involved. Oh my God.
So sad.
Amazing. Yeah. And then
subscribing right now.
Good. You're going to love it. It's so good.
Hit it.
I mean, you're going to hate, love it.
Or, yeah.
You know. Love to hate it, or hate to love it.
Like, I want to listen to it again. It was so good.
Yeah.
And then I have a book, The Slade House.
Oh, yeah. You were reading that.
Ooh, it's so creep town. Oh, it's
can
so
I borrow it?
Good. Oh, God, yes. I should have brought it. It's by David Mitchell, who wrote Cloud Atlas. It's probably the most well-known thing. But, ooh, it's just so creepy. It's, like, about this Slade House, but then shit's going on in there, and every 9 years some shit happens. So like every chapter is about a different 9 years.
Oh yeah.
Oh. It's so good. Highly recommend.
Love it.
Nice.
You guys know me. You know I love a heist. I love a robbery. And Netflix must have been eavesdropping on my phone.
Restarted watching that too.
Heard my prayers, and they gave me a show, and it is called Heist. It is on Netflix. It is 6 parts. Each story is in 2 parts, so it's 3 stories. It is my dream. I have watched stories more than once. I am not afraid to admit.
She watched one of the stories for the second time with me, and I kept saying, we don't have to watch this. You've already seen it. She was like, please, I want to.
Oh, my God. It was less than 48 hours later. I watched it again.
Fully 2 long episodes.
I watched the third story 2 times because I love stories like that. I love stories with real people in these insane situations, and I love, like, them being able to have this – thing happen, and then they can reflect back on it years later, and you kind of see the fallout.
And the talking heads in it are great, and like you said, whoever does the editing is fucking incredible.
Yeah, talk about winning an award.
And like the graphics, and
it's great. So I can't recommend it enough. It's true crime, but it's, you know, not violent, so if you're not into that kind of stuff, it's just 3 really incredible stories with like really incredible people.
I can't wait. I gotta watch the other 2.
Yes, so good.
Okay, next episode. What's the deal? We've got some doo-doo-doo-doo.
Oh, right. Well, Allison said it's adorable. I haven't watched it yet.
Ah, it's a goddamn delight.
But it's an unexplained Seggy, which I haven't gotten in a while. And it is the Belgium UFO.
Love it.
Woo! And then I have an unexplained death, and it is the story of Robert Hamrick.
And I have a wanted segment, Philip Breen.
I've already watched this one. It's good.
Great. All right. And you hear us say it all the time, but we love reviews. They really help us out. We donate to a different organization every time we get one. This month's is the Wild Bird Fund. And Carlin's going to read a review that we found right now.
I am. Okay. This one is written by Slardy Bartfast. Slardy Bartfast 75, titled Love This Show. And this has a lot of emojis involved, which I will try to act out right now. I can't get enough of this show. Furthermore, flamingo emoji, ninja emoji, corn emoji, leg emoji, spool of thread emoji, beeper emoji, shrimp emoji. This isn't a secret code. It's just that once I started typing emojis, I couldn't stop. Is that weird? Probably. No weirder than the fact that there's a disembodied leg emoji. Anyway, this show is one of my all-time faves to listen to. Thanks so much for all the hard work and research you guys do.
Love it. Jamie would be very upset if I didn't mention that Slutty Bartfast is from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, Jamie.
Jamie would have been like, what? Why didn't you tell?
Did Jamie write this?
Jamie's like setting up different iTunes accounts just to like make us feel good.
I mean, I could see that. Okay, so leave a review that brightens our day. You can also just rate the show. That's helpful. And subscribe. You can go to patreon.com/resolvemysteriespodcast if you're interested in supporting us there. And if you subscribe at the $5 a month level or higher, you'll get ad-free episodes, 2 extra episodes a month, and other goodies, possibly in your mailbox. To see photos we reference in the episode, follow us on Instagram at resolvemysteriespodcast and on Facebook and Twitter at resolvethepod. And you can contact us if you want to talk or just tell us something. At resolvemysteriespodcast.com, resolvemysteriespodcast@gmail.com, or at our P.O. Box, 14005, Portland, Oregon, 97293. And speaking of contact us, send us your stories for listener short stack episodes so we can keep making them. Anything you want to tell us. And, boy, do we love you.
Oh, my gosh, we love you so.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh, have we ever told you
how much we love you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye. Hello and welcome to Resolve Mysteries Podcast. This is season 4, episode 9, part 2 of Why?
I was going to say,
no one can do the intro without Eliza laughing.
Because Allison said, ha. She was going to say hi.
Oh, go ahead. Say it.
No.
Well, I'm Carlin.
I'm Allison.
I'm Eliza.
And we're fighting.
We're in a fight.
Just kidding.